Session number 22231, Reel 1.
This is Meg Oliver, Reel 1. Meg, could I ask you first of all about your life before the war? Whereabouts were you born and brought up?
I was born in the Brixton area in a nursing home at Knights Hill, and initially we moved about into several rented properties. The move to Lee, where we finished up, South Lee, was in connection with my father becoming captain of a boys' brigade company attached to South Lee Baptist Church, where a patron of the church, as it were, put down the deposit for us on one of the new 1930s semi-detached houses. And we went to live there when I was 2 and a half. And that was where we spent the years before the war. It was a big new housing estate, lots of people finding the money to move out of London and buy their own property, which was regarded as the thing to do if you could. My father was an insurance clerk in London, and we went to a local primary school that had just been built, presumably to meet the need of the children on these big estates. And it was really all built to scale, with little toilets and everything, and with big windows, big side, the whole of one side of the classroom, and a big sand pit. It was very avant-garde, but the teaching was still good. We still sat in rows on occasion and learned from the blackboard, but we also had tables to work from, so it was right on the cutting edge of education in those days. And it was an LCC school, and we had this pride in being LCC pupils. And I suppose we lived the life of a suburban family at that time. I suppose we were, even by then, a little unusual in that our life centred around our local Baptist church, where my father ran this very successful boys brigade company, and his life and ours, I suppose, revolved around that, sometimes I think to my mother's disappointment, really. But it was very successful. He had a real pastoral care for the boys. They had a lot of discipline in it, to take these kids off the streets, literally, and there was a poor area, and most of these boys came from there. But he did very well and saw to them getting on and things like that.
Was that the aim of the Boys' Brigade?
Boys' Brigade was to do all that promotes good Christian manliness and encourage and instill habits of self-respect, and all that leads to true Christian manliness.
It was interesting you mentioning to take the boys off the streets. Was it? It have that aim?
I think so, because it was started in the slums of Glasgow by George Smith, and some of the things that it insisted on, like you polished your boots, you were very poor, so all you might be able to afford was the haversack, but it must be white, and your shoes must be polished, which are all things I suspect sometimes are introduced into IT programmes. That's why he was brought to this church. The minister was a friend of his, and he'd got this group of unruly boys, and he thought my father could deal with him, which he did. He did a very good job with him. And then it was all blown to bits in 1939, and two of his boys were killed. One was a prisoner of war with the Japs, never came back. And of course, it never recovered after the war. It was just finished. He found it very hard that these boys, I think, took the heart out of him, and he had by then moved in the middle of the war to another job.
Well, what are your memories of life? You know, obviously you would have been a very young child, wouldn't you?
Well, the freedom. We were the street was a cul-de-sac, and my house was at the end of it. And the freedom of being able to play out. The coalman, the fishmonger, all coming with their carts, with horses, and the milkman, and the baker, and my mother. We used to spend the afternoon seeing her friends and going and meeting other children who were her friends' children, not necessarily my friends. We ate, you know, properly. The big excitement, as far as eating was concerned, was on a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, when my father arrived from Leadenhall Market, where he worked very near to Leadenhall Market, with a great box of bag of fruit. It was a straw woven thing of fruit. And he'd buy this fruit every week, and so we'd always have a fruit bowl full, and this is a habit that I still carry on. Always had lots of fruit. He was working on the garden, because these gardens were fields before we'd moved there, and doing all that stuff. And we saw my aunt and my grandmother lived just round the corner, because they had moved out to be near us, because that's what families did. And when my aunt married, rather surprisingly, my uncle moved in with my grandmother, presumably because she couldn't afford the mortgage. But he moved from a council house in Morden. So they were all part of life. I mean, and I used to stand on the corner, and I could do this in those days, stand on the corner of the busy road and wait for my aunt or my father coming home from work. And I would stand there for a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, watching for them to come up from the station, which of course was the arterial route for all these commuters to come. They used to come to Lee Station. And then he would walk up from the station. I would watch for him for ages on this road.
Yes, it's interesting. It's a new suburb being
built.
When the war was over, was that ever recovered, that lifestyle? Was it the same or...?
Well, it was very... We moved. We moved from Lee to Mottingham, not very far away, to be near the parents of one of these boys who'd been killed. That my father had really been quite upset by the whole thing, and it appealed to him to live near them. And so we moved to Mottingham. And the lifestyle, yes, the women still weren't working. My mother got pregnant at the end of the war, so she'd got a baby. And yes, they were, you know, they'd have a cup of tea with each other. She'd be friends with the neighbours. The neighbours were all very important. They were also at home, and they would all be seeing neighbours. Some of it fairly informal, talking over the garden fence. I mean, the woman next door never came in, but they would talk most mornings. Mm-hmm. And the woman over the road had a child about my brother's age, and so they would sort of talk together. And we would still see my uncle and aunt on a regular basis. They would come over to us on a Saturday, or we would go to them on the buses and trams across London for the evening.
When the war was sort of brewing up, do you recall any of that?
Yes.
You know, how your life was affected?
Well, yes, there were two incidents before the war actually broke out. One was with my limited reading skills, working out Czechoslovakia on the news stands. And the other was rather more traumatic. We must have been being fitted for gas masks, so everybody was tense. and my parents managed to miss each other or something, and so there was all that going on above you, like it is when you're a child, you know, this argument about where they'd arranged to meet, and the traumatic business of putting your face in this rubbery thing and the smell of it. And seeing my sister, who was four, she had a pretty one, and seeing babies being put in these cases, and that was all quite hairy in this church hall. Not our church, the Church of England hall opposite us, and all having been done. And it was a wet night, and it was all quite horrible.
I wonder how you feel when you see the news today with pictures of gas masks.
Well, I tend to think that the sophistication of it now is so much greater than it was then, that if they mean to do it, they'll do it, quite honestly. I mean...
Would you wear a gas mask now?
Yes. Not that. Yes, if I could get to it in time. And if they issued them, but I wouldn't go and buy one. That's ambivalent, isn't it? But that's how I feel. I suppose I wouldn't go and buy one because I don't want to acknowledge that that could happen. But if they were issued, I would go along like a good girl and get one.
In the way of shelter building in your area? Or sandbagging?
I can't remember if my father was building an Anderson. He wasn't inclined that way. I can't remember about... I think we had an Anderson, but we wouldn't have been using it. And he may have just thought he was going to get us away and we wouldn't need it. Because we came back later in the war when the incendiary's on, and by then we had a Morrison, so I don't know what had happened about that. I don't remember a lot of the tension and discussion about what was going to happen. My husband, whose father was in the Navy, can remember a lot about that, but I can't remember any sort of percolation down from the adults about this war that was coming. Oh dear. I think they were very busy with their life, with a very positive sort of life, and it perhaps didn't have much time to talk about it, and certainly not to worry. But they'd obviously made plans about what was going to happen, and one of the basics of their plan was that we should not be separated from my mother. So when Hitler invaded Poland, that was the 1st of September, I think, we were shot off down to Lenham in Kent. One of my father's boys' brigade company had moved from Lee so his father could be chauffeur to a big house down there in Lenham, and they'd got a chauffeur's house, lodge, whatever, and we went down there. I think it was very much an emergency arrangement because everybody thought we were going to be bombed like Poland, and we went down there, and what I can remember then is the beautiful sunny day and being in the garden, and lots of children were in the garden because the adults were all listening carefully. And being in the garden and knowing something very important was being said, and being told, I think, that the war had started.
You would have been seven then, is that right?
Mm, yes. Yeah.
Did it mean anything to you, war?
No, I hadn't got... I mean, obviously, in my parents' mind, my mother had lost a brother in the First World War. They knew what it meant. They would have carried terrible memories. But no, I didn't know what war meant. I knew the Germans were nasty. It was on that sort of level. But I didn't think, oh my goodness, we're going to be bombed. I mean, I think today's children are in a worse position because they watch the television. It's all spelled out to them. they see these terrible things happen. But, you know, they didn't say there's going to be another war and show terrible pictures of the First World War, or we could be bombed and show pictures of Poland. We had no visual pictures of what it could mean. I think I may have picked up the Germans were nasty from Stephen King Hall on the Children's Hour, because he was warning for a long while before the war about events in Germany. Now, you probably can check that out on the old tapes of Stephen King Hall, but there was this feeling that Hitler was not up to any good. He obviously would have had to be very careful what he said, but he was sort of taking the Churchillian line. We really do need to watch this man. So I may have picked that up, young as I was, from that. But no, I had no idea what it meant. I knew it meant we had to live down in Lenham safely, and Daddy had to go back to London. And we were there for a month. And after a while, the tension's too, you know, the house too small. But that was the first place I ever had Rice Krispies. And they came in about then. there was a school evacuated to the big house. And the boys slept in the stable adjoining this house where the chauffeur lived, which must have been the coachman's house at one time, I should think. And the boys were all in this long garret place, you see, sleeping. I suppose they had to find space for everybody as best they could. And and we had poked knots in the dividing partition where we slept. And we used to watch these boys. I mean, not prurently, but, you know, just, well, I mean, you're just curious because you're children. And a woman came down whose son was at this school and took him back straight away because of the conditions, you know, that she wasn't going to have him sleeping. I remember all that. Took him back to London. She'd rather he'd be bombed than live here.
What were your conditions like, you know, that you were living in?
I just shared a bedroom with Morag, who was a bit older than me, the girl of the family. But I suppose the tensions build up, especially when there wasn't any bombing. So eventually, then we moved on, again with my mother. My aunt's stepdaughter was a teacher, and her school was evacuated to Oxted in Surrey. And she found us a place in a farmhouse, which was very interesting. It had oil lamps, and no inside toilets, and animals, and we were there for 6 weeks. And what I can remember is screaming and kicking when I was taken to Sunday school. Now, I went to the school and all those things. I can't remember anything about that school, but I went to the school and I coped with all the changes, and I think this just must have been one change. I was frightened of the man who led it. Goodness knows what. I mean, I'd never had anything to do with him. And I screamed and kicked all the way and would not go. And I think that must have been a sort of reaction to all this moving about. So we went there and I learnt to milk a cow. Learnt to drink milk from the cow. Warm for breakfast. Collected acorns for the pigs, for the farmer. And he said, if I got so many, he will pay me sixpence. And I left them on the scales to show him I'd picked so many. And in the morning he said, the rats must have taken them. I've forgotten that. Anyway. And it was the autumn then, and my parents must have been very poor, trying to keep up the mortgage repayments and pay the farmer and extra expenses for my father's journeys backwards and forwards, because on one occasion I lost sixpence change from getting some shopping, and I went out in the gloaming to look for this sixpence among all the fallen leaves. And I would have only been seven. And I'd been sent to the shop to do an errand, which is what all children used to do. And I'd dropped the sixpence on the way home. And my mother must have been so concerned about the finances, she sent me back when it was nearly dark to look for this sixpence, which I never found.
How were you getting on with the local people in both these places? Did you have much to do with them?
No, you felt now it's the children. We lived in the farmers. No, we didn't have a lot to do. No sooner had we settled down than we were moving on in these two occasions. And at school you did feel you didn't quite know. I can't remember the first. I can't remember anything about the schools in those two positions. Whether I never got into one or what, I can't remember. But we stayed there 6 weeks, so that would bring us up to September spent in Lenham, and then midway up November, nothing was happening, no bombing. And so, presumably, I think partly because of the conditions, I mean, in this way out farmhouse, partly the separation, partly the financial implications, we all went home.
That would be in November, would it? Mm-hmm. Were you pleased that you were going home?
I think so.
How easy was it to travel then? How would you have got home? From Oxton in Surrey, you say?
We'd come on the train. I mean, we'd done the train up to London and then on out to Leigh, and then we'd either have had a porter to help with the luggage, or the luggage would have been delivered after we got home. I can't remember any of that.
Was it good being home?
Yes, it was interesting. I had passed in that September, I had passed into the juniors. So I couldn't go to my other school anymore, because that was for the infants, and the only other school on site was for the senior children, 11s to 14s it was then. The school I should have gone to was Baring Road, and somehow, I never went there. They had a sort of emergency system going, whereby you went in the morning or you went in the afternoon and collected work and had it, and then you took it back and somebody marked it for you. But there was a teacher just round the corner living in one of the houses locally, and she had been a teacher who, because she was married, had had to stop teaching. And so she used to take the children from the immediate area and give us lessons. Whether that was for a little while this other system was being worked out, I can't really remember. But this was a sort of private little initiative. I don't think she was probably paid. She just did it as her bit towards the war, these children needing some sort of stimulation and help to keep their education going. And then I think possibly then they got more organised, and it was there was a lot of snow that winter, and I can remember walking to school, so there must have been this morning afternoon thing arranging by then, and the snow came right above my Wellington boots if I walked in the wrong place.
You would have been home for that Christmas, would you?
Yes.
1939-40. Mm. What sort of Christmas was that? Was it a normal one?
Well, I think it was a Christmas where my father was hanging on the turkey's guts to try and get them out. Because he lived in Leaden, because he worked near Leadenhall Street, he would have possibly collected the turkey on his way home. But then we had to prepare the thing, and I think it was that Christmas that he was hanging on the giblets and that trying to get all the innards out, and then it had to be plucked. We never got to bed. I think it was that Christmas. The rationing hadn't really bitten all that deeply yet. I think my aunt and uncle were there as usual, and whether we saw other members of the family, I can't remember. Possibly we would have seen my father's sister,
who was very devoted. So
it was relatively normal, was it? Did you have presents and things?
We had presents all through the war.
How was your little sister getting on? Joy, was it?
She was all right, as long as she didn't have to go to school. And we'd hear about that later. But possibly when you're a little sister, you've got a big sister, and that sort of helps you carry on. And she was still quite little. She was only just four. And so as long as Mummy was there, it would have been all right. But the four-year gap between us meant that I wasn't involved in her. She was still very little, and I wouldn't necessarily... I'd moved into school, and she was still at home, not nursery school or anything. So I think as long as she was with Mummy, it wouldn't have mattered to her.
Was that the same for you, Meg?
Oh, yes. Yes, as long as you're with Mummy.
Your
oh, yes. Yes, I thought it was awful not to have Mummy there. Yes. Yes. It was important.
So how long were you at home before you went again?
Then we stayed there until June, when Dunkirk and all that was blowing up. And it was more invasion than... really. And then they thought we would be bombed initially before the invasion.
Were you worried yourself? Did you know much about what was going on?
It's funny, isn't it, that you weren't worried? I tell you what there was. There was this feeling, well, we just got to fight this war until we win it. Now, when you look at the situation in 1940, that is really stupid. But that is, I never picked up anywhere a suggestion that we were going to lose this war. And anybody who started talking like that, you know, people looked down on. We just got to fight it until we won it. That was the feeling. I subsequently learned, and I don't know if he would have carried this out, that my father said that if the Germans had come, he would have killed us all. But I don't know, when it came to it, whether he would have done it. But he was very, very anxious about us being under German rule. And as I say, knowing him, he may just have said it. And when it came to it, not being able to do it. But I didn't feel frightened. I remember the journey down to Oxford, because it was all very crowded, like trains were.
This is the second evacuation, yes. Is it? Mm. Yes. Yes, could you tell me about that and how it came about?
My aunt, Mrs. Maud Adams, my father's brother's wife, had a daughter at Brixton Central School called Evelyn. And they were looking for what they called helpers to go and be with the school. And she got one of the posts and spoke up for my mother and got her a job as well. And so they were appointed helpers to Brixton Central School, which was evacuated to Oxford, to Botley for the senior school and Kennington for the junior school.
Which one would you have been with? The
Kennington one.
The Kennington, the junior. Mm.
But I didn't go to Brixton Central at that point. And so we all went down to Oxford. And we went to this big house. The sort of house my grandmother had been a cook in. Well, except she'd been in bigger houses than that, but that was the move for us socially. And we certainly didn't live with the family. We lived in the quarters of the cook and the maid. All of us.
Would this have been in Botley?
No, that's in Kennington.
In Kennington?
Yes. And... extraordinary to my mother was that she was brought up in Kennington.
So
not the village, but the London part.
Right. So you were in the big house, the sort of servants' quarters in Kennington.
Yes. And the house actually belonged to the retired vicar of the village, who lived there. He was in his 80s, Father Trevelyan, and lived there with his daughter Elizabeth. And the myth was that they were connected with the Trevelyans, the GM, you know. They were certainly not at all in the same social bracket as we were.